CJSF 90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Well, good morning and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus and community radio from the campus of Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, where we are on the unceded lands of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples, as well as others in the language groups of the Halkomelean and the Squamish language. I'm Robin, and I will be here as one of your hosts. I'm here with Pranjali this morning. Hello.
Hello, and good morning. It is so good to be back. I know I always say that whenever I'm here, but honestly, it feels so good. And what a semester it has been, honestly. It has been too much, too many things happening. Finally did my exams on Monday. I finished them. And
yay!
Thank you. And then I got arrested yesterday, and here I am again on work and on radio. So
why did you get arrested?
No, rest. Just rest.
I'm just like, what?
Not arrested. No. No.
Got rest. That's
yes,
good.
Yes. I'm not so much fun or like I'm not trying any of those things. So, no, I'm just a bookworm.
I thought there was a little piece of Pranjali that I was just learning about this morning.
No. I mean, and also it has been kind of a rainy and dark and gloomy outside. So it doesn't make sense to, you know, just be around, but I see like there's sun this weekend, so I mean I'm gonna take an advantage of that. But yeah, and also it's Christmas. It's honestly, this year has been going too fast.
Yeah, I concur and agree, and I wrote a little text to a friend of mine. We're trying to coordinate a phone call next week after the holidays, and I was like, yeah, frankly, everything's just a whirl and I can't make sense of very much right now. So maybe Wednesday, maybe Thursday. I don't even know what the day is. So, yeah, I think I think that there's definitely a feeling in the air that very much resonates with not just me and you about that feeling, but others. We've got hopefully an interesting show for you.
I think
today.
So. Yeah, it's. I sent you one of the readings beforehand to just get through, and it is a part of a few other readings that I did. It was last year in a class, and then I did some readings this year as well, and I could see the connections between those two different courses that I took. And I just wanted to keep the conversation that we left last time going, because I think it's a very important conversation, and it's also where I'm interested and my bias comes in, because I study that, so I want to keep learning it and keep talking about it. So
yeah, and that topic is related to technology and gender and how we understand and intersect with technology as gendered beings, and how the technology is kind of geared or not geared towards us depending on what we're identifying our gender to be. So yeah, I think it'll be quite quite interesting from the article that, again, you sent me to read. I was going to start us off with a song just to sort of get us in the fray of things here. Something a little jazz-like. It's not a little jazz-like. It is jazz. And it's just a short little blip. This is called Prelude 700 Steps Descending to the Gates of Magnetic Sleep. Maybe that will give you a window on how I'm feeling this morning. Here we go on Intravenous. Well, that's a dreamy little piece, as the name suggests. The band is called Trio, and the name of the track, again, Prelude 700 Steps Descending to the Gates of Magnetic Sleep. I think you could put that on a loop tape and really have it lovely twinkling in the background as you fall asleep. But it is morning, 10:08 here Pacific time, and this is Intravenous. As Pranjali and I were saying just before that piece of music, we're going to dig in further to a conversation that we quite often have here on the show about technology and gender. And the article that you sent me, Pranjali, was called The Industrial Revolution in the Home, Household Technology and Social Change in the 20th Century. And that is by the author Ruth Schwartz Cohen, written in 1976. So it does go back a little ways, and I think shows a little bit of its dating. However, it's really interesting. She says right at the beginning of the article, or her piece, that her impetus was to ask middle-class American women when the implements with which they did their everyday household work changed. Did the technology change in household appliances have an effect upon the structure of American households or upon the ideologies that governed the behavior of American women, or upon the functions that families needed to perform? And so those are really interesting questions when you think about how, when we engage with certain technologies, and especially when we think about household technologies, because, you know, that whole idea of the public versus private realms, and, you know, how the household is mostly the reign of the domestic and the female, that we often don't think of technology there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever we hear the words, I'm just going to go a step back, and probably this is going to turn into something else because this is a very long conversation in itself. But like whenever we say the word technology or science, we always think about, you know, scientific, you know, white coat, lab coats, people who are, you know, pouring some liquids in the beakers and tumblers, and they're doing something that is scientific, that is innovative. It is supposed to transform everything. It's supposed to change, and it is supposed to be new. It is supposed to be very neutral, because it's the people who don't care about politics. They don't care about anything. They're just being objective. They are just doing science. So doing science, doing technology, is often seen as something that is a very neutral, very objective, separated from the world. And it's seen as something that is not like biased in any sense. And however, I think this article does go a while back. And I think that's also important. But it really, I think, questions and asks about change and the technological change. What does it mean? Because, yeah, we often associate technology today with, you know, let's say AI. What is AI? Artificial intelligence. What does it actually mean? And I see all of these, like, I call them Instagram gurus who are trying to explain what AI is. And I'm like, where are you getting this information from? It is always so hilarious to hear them just throw in the words like data, algorithm, this is going to change everything. It's going to be transformational. The world is going to be so much better. And, you know, and we will lose all our jobs. We will just, you know, not have anything else. We will be on the mercy of the technologies, and making so many big claims like technology is change. You know?
Well, that's what's interesting about this article, mm-hmm. I think, is that idea that with technology and with the, you know, advent of technology, our lives are going to be made easier and mm-hmm. have been made easier, and that it's going to alleviate all of this mundanity that we have been accustomed to choring away at, right? And and what Ruth Schwartz Cohen kind of discovers or uncovers, determines, is that that is actually not the case at all. Mm-hmm. And that what happens, in fact, is that by looking in her study at what the technologies were at the turn of the century, I think she picks sort of 1920-ish as a pivot point, because there was a lot of technological change from kind of the 1880s to the 1920s. Mm-hmm. It was a boom for technology, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of change in the world, but also in our lifestyles, mm-hmm. and the ways that we were able to access technology. Also, it became more available en masse.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I was just gonna put in something in there.
Yeah, go
and
ahead
and say that it was partially because of the world wars that were happening, that a lot of emphasis was on manufacturing technologies. So all the weaponry, all the technologies to fight, defense, and all those things. But also making the life easier. So washing machine, for example, microwaves, for example, came in being during that time because they were designed to solve like a military purpose in some sense. I'm going to tell the story of a microwave in a maybe to the mid of the pod, mid of the session here, but I will let you complete. Sorry.
But what she kind of came up against was this rubric where there's a functionalist idea that, you know, in the before time, you know, in those years, families looked like XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, because we have graduated with all of this technology throughout the past, you know, 100 years now, and our families look like XYZ now. I guess I shouldn't use those same coordinates.
XY1Z1.
That, you know, it's played a part. Mm-hmm. In, you know, this way or that way. What I found really interesting was that the technology, what she found was that the technologies were really driven by three aspects. The developers of mm-hmm. the technology, or the manufacturers of the technology, and the advertising
mm-hmm.
and the agents of advertising that technology to the households. And the bigger sense of sort of propaganda, I guess, around that, because it's one thing to have just one advertising, but then when there's this encompassing message that becomes mm-hmm. a value system,
yeah,
right, it becomes a systemic institutionalized ideal, and this ideology that she speaks of,
mm-hmm.
then we're on a slippery slope.
Yes, definitely, yes. And I think, yeah, just thinking about the role of the advertisers and the agents of advertising, for example, I could think of the biggest like advertisement that happened through this year was for the film Barbie. And you can see how it manufactured what a Barbie is and what it means to be a Barbie, and, you know, what kind of characteristics it carries and what is the modern woman supposed to look like. And in many ways, it questions patriarchy, but then there's also a discussion about, you know, in what ways it is limited to have movies like these, and, like, there's a whole discussion there. But I mean, the kind of things that we that can be conveyed through such advertisements to construct meanings of technologies socially, for example, is an interesting one. Especially, I was going to talk about the microwave and say that actually, if you go into a little bit of history around how microwaves were invented, they were supposed to serve the purpose of cooking and heating, not cooking so much, but heating and making like easy cooking easier for the male bachelors who were living away from the families and working in the war zones, as you may call them. And so that was the audience. So that was where the, you know, the invention came from. So because there was a lot of inventions happening with infrared rays and, you know, how the wave technology can be used. So it was really packaged, or it was really built from that notion that microwave is supposed to ease on the cooking, and it was specifically purposed for the male bachelors and the people living away from homes. But then it is interesting how in a few years, a massive wave of like advertisements and everything happened, and they were like, microwave is an essential for a modern kitchen, so the women should buy it if they want to have a modern kitchen and want to serve their family. So that is how it changed. And now, as we see, microwave is a very kitchen, yeah, centric, you know, because it's supposed to, yeah, it is aligned with feminine technologies, that it will, you know, do the cooking for you, and it is going to, you know, help you, and it's going to reduce the cooking time and all those things. So how really, if you look at the 1920s or 1930s, like advertisements around microwave technology, it is really interesting how it's like manufactured and how it's like packaged as a feminine and kitchen technology. So those things are brought together. So yeah, that was also very interesting. I don't think it was in this reading. It was somewhere else, but I remember reading it somewhere. Yeah, maybe it's in this reading. I'm just going to say the name of this. Kitchen Technologies, The Promises and the Alibis. So 1934 to 1966. It's by Holiday Laura Scott. So yeah, if you want to check out that story, maybe you can read this one. And I found really interesting the question of technological change and social change. And I wrote a paper this semester on understanding that can actually technology be used to make a social change, and how and why we connect technology enabling social change as calling it technology as a change itself. Like, it is supposed to transform everything. Its agenda is to solve the world's problems. But can it really do that? So, like, the discussion between the reality and the rhetoric, I think, that's something that I explored in my essay this semester, which also talks about and cuts through this example of the domestic technologies, for example.
Well, I think, you know, in this particular article that you had shared with me, Ruth Schwartz Cohen does a really good job of exemplifying the ways in which technology doesn't actually, mm-hmm. I mean, it creates social change, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? But social change is just change. It doesn't designate or denote that it's for the better or mm-hmm. for the worse of mm-hmm. of the situation, and I think part of what Ruth is able to do in this article is show that it actually turned things into a situation for a lot of the women that were implementing these technologies mm-hmm. or affected by these technologies, it made their lives harder. Actually,
yeah.
it didn't open up free time. It didn't open up, mm-hmm. You know, these promises of ease and leisure and mm-hmm. and those kinds of things. You know, there's one example where, and I remember my dad talking about this. She called it Blue Mondays in the article, which were laundry days, right? Mm-hmm. It was Blue Monday. You did your laundry, and everything got the bluing to make it sparkling white. I wish you could still buy that stuff too. But with the advent of the washing machine, for instance, even though it was still a wringer washer, and you know it did take a lot of the labor away from the, you know, having to use washboards and, you know, really scrub a dub dub. It also allowed for you to think about laundry and do laundry on more days of the week, mm-hmm. so that it became something that got stretched out over time, and laundry was a never ending process.
It is a never-ending process.
It is a never-ending process, right? And it's interesting how, you know, now in this day and age, we can kind of resonate and go, my God, there's always these piles of laundry, right? And it's not like we can't do laundry all the time, but it's that idea of having to do laundry all the time and the expectation mm-hmm. that, you know, we're going to have clean clothes on demand when we need them. Otherwise, there's, you know, this shaming or these other kind of ideologies that feed into mm-hmm. our consciousness that advertisers play on that make us feel not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is one of the things that really stood out to me in reading this and considering how the ideas of social change and technology in the domestic realm were really used and became kind of weaponized in a way to create this level of devaluation mm-hmm. and guilt and embarrassment that, you know, now that you have a vacuum, well, why aren't you vacuuming every day? And why don't you have these crumbs off your floor? And, you know, why isn't your kid's bib sparkling white? And, you know, all of these things, because technology has, quote unquote, made it easier for us to achieve the gold standard.
Yes. And the gold standard was created, which did not exist in the past. So the clean ironed shirts and the, you know, perfect collars were associated with, you know, these guys come from a social class where they can buy technology and use it. And for those who cannot afford that, they were understood as like, they're not as modern or they don't have that much amount of, you know, money to afford that technology. And so there was like different distinctions created. Even today, it's like, it's very weird in terms of like how AI is understood as like a very Western transformational thing. And whereas like other countries, for example, in the global South are understood to be, you know, not so technologically advanced. So what does that even mean, you know? And yeah, I really I remember while we were talking about it, I was like, oh, this is the article. It was so good. I remember reading it. No, I read it a while back, but no, absolutely, yes. And it is interesting how it also hones in on the pre-existing standards. So if it is a task of the home, then it is associated with the female gender, to say at that time. It is like, so washing and cleaning was a woman's task. And now, since we have a vacuum cleaner, it is still a woman's task. So she still has to do it all.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I think we'll play a song mm-hmm. and come back and talk a little bit more, obviously, about this topic. There's a couple of things that I want to kind of break down, because I think the article that I read, anyways, also speaks, which I thought was interesting, to how feminism in mm-hmm. the 60s became something that the middle class white women were particularly kind of bent on achieving, and why it was so important for that sort of sector of the population specifically. And I think that informs to how you know, some of the problems within the feminist movement and mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff exist to us in present day. So that feels like a lot, but
we will try our best.
I've got a little bit more jazz here for us. This is the Diva Jazz Orchestra and a track called Three Sisters and a Cousin here on Intravenous.